Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network. And I would like to introduce myself. My name is Pamela Muhammad, and I am an attorney. And I welcome you to our show, A Time for Justice. This is a very exciting show that we have for you tonight, and I want to start off by encouraging you to press 1 to get into the host queue. The call-in number for the show is 563-999-3065, and you can ask a question or make a comment. As I said, my name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I am the host of A Time for Justice. Our topic tonight is an interview with Mr. Andrew Wyatt, who is the Public Relations and Crisis Manager for actor and comedian Bill Cosby. So we're going to engage in a discussion with Mr. Wyatt. And, you know, our show, A Time for Justice, discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion with legal minds. We discuss the country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws as we observe the overall failure of legal systems to give justice and the negative impact these failures have had on Black people and Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealings. We want justice under the law. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct often seen, which are really just distractions from detection. Let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. As I said, tonight, our show, the topic is an interview with Mr. Andrew Wyatt, the Public Relations and Crisis Manager for actor and comedian Dr. William Bill Cosby. And also, tonight's show, we're going to have a guest appearance by our very own Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava Muhammad is the national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And she is actually the host of a show that comes on the Elevated Places Network called Dr. Ask Dr. Ava. And that show comes on Thursdays at 7 o'clock p.m. And you can also visit Dr. Ava Muhammad at MinisterAva.com. So I'm going to open up our guest for tonight, Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad. I want to open up her mic. As I said, she's making a guest appearance tonight. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Dr. Ava. Sister Ava?
Yes, ma'am. Here
okay.
I am.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Well,
yes.
Salam, Sister Attorney Pamela. It's a
yes,
pleasure
ma'am.
And an honor to be on the program tonight, and I'm looking forward to this program.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Me. I am as well, and thank you so much again for joining us tonight, Sister Ava. And also we have Brother Maurice Muhammad. And Brother Maurice is joining us tonight as well. Brother Maurice is a chief magistrate in the city of Bessemer, Alabama, and Brighton, Alabama. And so, Brother Maurice, it's actually, I think I've opened your mic, and I wanted to greet you as well.
Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikum salam, Brother Maurice.
I'm well by Allah's grace, dear sister, and honored to be on line with the two most beautiful and powerful sisters in the world.
Okay, and that is awesome. Let me go ahead and bring our guest in as well. He's one second. Let me bring him on and get this technical difficulty because Mr. Wyatt is the public relations and crisis manager for actor and comedian Bill Cosby. So we look forward to him coming on the line. Sister Ava, I know I heard you speaking on Sunday on a show, and you referenced some of the injustice that occurs with the attack on black leadership. So I know that it's good to start there because this is one of the things this topic is about.
Yes, ma'am, and I apologize. I went, walked into a room and lost contact momentarily. But yes, and of course, throughout our history here, there has been a systematic effort to ensure that black leadership is crushed. First of all, the fear tactics and the terrorism that has been employed to prevent us from even wanting to stand up and take the position of leadership on behalf of our people. And it's one of the most difficult things that a human being can do is leading or serving even black people in America, because you suffer not only from the racism and the attendant oppression and violence against us, but because our people, after 400 plus years of being made to look at ourselves through the lens of white America, we are problematic in our own way because of a resistance to black leaders.
Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, thank you so much for that introduction. So we're here tonight, as I said, once again, without further ado, we have Mr. Andrew Wyatt, who's the public relations and crisis manager for actor and comedian Bill Cosby. And we're going to be talking about the case. We know, of course, that the opinion of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania for the Middle District issued an order that Mr. Bill Cosby's convictions, judgment of sentence are vacated, and he was discharged. He is discharged. And we know that this is unjust, and we often talk about on this show how the laws have been used wickedly and not applied to give us freedom, justice, and equality. And so that's something I'm really looking forward to hearing from Mr. Wyatt. I'd like to briefly talk about Mr. Wyatt. He is such a wonderful, I really, through watching him on television and different interviews, I have really come to really find him to be such a inspirational young man, brother. He is a businessman. And so Mr. Wyatt, Andrew Wyatt, is the founder, president, and CEO of Birmingham-based purpose public relations firm that is known nationally and globally. He has overseen the rapid growth of the PR firm, as well as provided counsel to hundreds of companies, including members of the Fortune 500 and Forbes 400. His work spans global interests, corporate entities, and high-profile individuals as well. So one of the foremost respected and ethical public relations and crisis management experts in today's results-driven world, Mr. Wyatt is known for his aggressive, results-focused orientation, as well as his close working relationship with members of the media, influencers, decision-makers, politicians, and iconic celebrities. Currently, Mr. Wyatt serves as the public relations and crisis manager for the actor and comedian Bill Cosby. In this role, Wyatt is responsible for working directly with Cosby's legal team in various capacities, as well as creating strategic plans in order to preserve the Cosby legacy. Other projects he's worked on, historical perspectives on Black Wall Street. This is a virtual event that he partnered with some very famous people. So earlier in Mr. Wyatt's career, he spent 12 years in broadcast television business, working for ABC 33 and Fox News as a production assistant, news producer, health producer, entertainment producer, and account exec. Mr. Wyatt graduated with honors from Miles College with a Bachelor of Arts degree in communication and with a minor in education. While a student at Miles College, he did many, many things, actually even serving as a chief editor. Mr. Wyatt is a member of the Omega Psi Phi fraternity, other organizations as well. He is a native of Bessemer, Alabama. Mr. Wyatt is a proud father of a beautiful daughter, and he's a pop-pop. That's what he says of a handsome grandson. So, Mr. Wyatt, I have opened up your mic, and I would like to welcome you to A Time for Justice.
Well, you know, thank you so much for having me. Attorney Muhammad, it's an honor to do your show. It's an honor to be a part of a show that, you know, unveils the unjust conviction of so many, you know, people out here who might not, you know, have the relevance of a Bill Cosby or the platform or resources of a Bill Cosby, and just fighting for people that look like us, people who have been targeted and,
yes,
you know, persecuted by the judicial system, not just 10 years, 20 years ago, but for over 400 to 500 years. We've seen this. We saw it if you go back to the scriptures. We saw it with Egypt, which represents bondage. So I'm just appreciative to be on your show, appreciative, you know, to talk to your listeners and just, you know, bring some messages of hope and inspiration for those who might not be able to get to someone like me, but just talk about how they can preserve their legacy, because we all have a legacy. We don't have to be a well-known name to have a legacy. So it's just an honor to be on your show, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, all praises are due to Allah, and thank you. The honor is mine as well, Mr. Wyatt. And joining us as a guest appearance on the show is Dr. Ava Muhammad, and she's the national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Yes, sir, as well as...
Wow, I'm so well. It's an honor to have you, Dr. Ava Muhammad. Mr. Cosby and I had a beautiful call with Brother Don Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan maybe about three, four weeks ago, and it was just
a beautiful call
to hear them talk and to hear them just talk about each other. And Minister Farrakhan sent through Brother Don Muhammad his Beethoven concerto performance from 19 years ago to Mr. and Mrs. Cosby to listen to. And they said to me to let Minister Farrakhan know that after dinner, that was our dessert. So Mr. Farrakhan has been a great supporter. Three years ago, right when Mr. Cosby was sentenced, I went to Chicago and spent time with him. He talked about all the great things that Mr. Cosby had done for the world, and that he would be safe and he would be protected. And Minister Farrakhan also is a fraternity brother as well. So what great leaders like himself, who did not run away from his friend, but he ran towards his friend. So I just thank you for being on the show with me and then representing, you know, the great leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan. So thank you, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Thank you, Brother Andrew. And I am so impressed with you. I saw you in the interview with Dr. Boyce Watkins shortly after the exoneration of our beloved brother. And I am so happy for Mr. Cosby that he has you on his team. So we look forward to continuing to stand by his side no matter what, because he is a national asset to Black people in America and around the world.
Well, that means the world to me. Look, we saw what these white folks, let's just call them for who they are and what they are and what they have done. We saw what they did to Minister Farrakhan by taking his constitutional rights away, the First Amendment, you know, and that's the freedom of speech, the freedom to assembly, the freedom to petition, the freedom of religion. But, you know, when it comes to taking our constitutional rights away, they call it a technicality. But if we took the First Amendment rights away from the media, I don't think it would be a technicality then. So that's what we're fighting for, what they did to Minister Farrakhan by stripping him away from social media. And that's another form of injustice. And to make it seem like it wasn't about just somebody Black, they said, well, let's throw a little salt in here with Donald Trump and take him down. But we know what that's all about. They will always sacrifice a few of theirs to get the multitude of us.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for those words. And I wanted to do, as a matter of housekeeping, Mr. Wyatt, we also have Brother Maurice Muhammad on the line, who is another member of Omega Psi Phi.
My brother, and it's my chapter brother too. Alpha Phi chapter.
That's right.
He's the magistrate in my hometown, Bessemer. So hey, that's a great brother you got on the phone. It's good to hear your voice, Brother Muhammad.
Yes, sir. Always a pleasure to speak with my brother.
Yes, sir. And Brother Maurice is part of the reason why you're here, Mr. Wyatt. So we're thankful, so thankful for you joining us. And so right into the constitutional rights and the violations, I've heard you speak about the breadth and depth, the due process violations. And looking at the court's opinion, you know, they talk about, if you know, this was a violation, and it wasn't just depositions that harmed him. It was just from the moment he was charged criminally. And even I've heard you talk about even before then. So this unjust prison sentence, that, you know, for crimes he was innocent of, and can you talk to us about that quest, some of what you've seen on this particular quest?
Correct.
Yes, sir.
I would love to. Look, Mr. Cosby sat for a deposition in 2005 with Andrea Constant out of Toronto, Canada. Now, this is a woman that Mr. Cosby was having an extramarital affair with. She was an employee at Temple University. I want to make that clear, because the way they tried to paint this, they tried to paint him as an older man, an elder, who had taken advantage of a student. This woman was not a student. She was an employee of Temple University basketball team with Don Staley. This woman befriended Mr. Cosby at an event at Temple University, because he sat on the board of Temple, a longtime supporter of Temple, a graduate of Temple. He lettered at Temple University playing football and the decathlon athlete there. So she befriended him. And this woman came to his home in Elkins Park, Philadelphia, seven times visited him 7 times. She visited him at various shows that he had in Connecticut and Canada. Well, there was one instance that she wanted to see Mr. Cosby, and he declined. He was doing a show in Toronto. Her mother, her sister, and all their family members and friends had this expectations of seeing him. And when he declined to see her anymore, then she waits a year, and she says, well, something happened to me. He drugged and sexually assaulted me. Well, what she then does, she calls an attorney, Dolores Troiani, out of Philadelphia. She didn't call a criminal attorney. She called a civil attorney. And her brother-in-law is a detective in Toronto. So they started calling attorneys. So this was all about money from the onset of her coming forward a year later. And she gives 5 different statements, and they were inconsistent statements. 2 statements were done to law enforcement agencies in Canada, and 3 were done to law enforcement agencies in Montgomery County, in Philadelphia. The district attorney at the time, the former district attorney, Bruce Castor, stated that there were so many inconsistencies in her stories that he foreclosed on any criminal proceedings or charges against Mr. Cosby. No warrant was ever issued for Mr. Cosby's arrest. No search warrant was entered for him to let them inside the home. He willingly showed up at Patterson and Belknap Law Firm with his attorney Jack Schmidt in New York, with the detectives from Montgomery County, PA, and he brought over in his medicine, in his bag, what herbs he was taking, and that he gave her Benadryl. Now, we all know that Benadryl does not make you lethargic. It doesn't cause paralysis. And that's what she said when he gave her Benadryl, that she became lethargic and she could not move. Well, keep in mind, that's the same structure of a statement that Gloria Allred had the women parading out with when they brought forward these allegations in 2014. But sticking with 2005 right now, so the current district attorney at the time, Bruce Castor, the former district attorney, he then forces Mr. Cosby into a civil court, civil deposition, where Mr. Cosby waives his Fifth Amendment rights, never to be prosecuted or charged for anything. So he willingly sat down for a deposition. And in the deposition, they ask him, did you give women drugs without their knowledge? He said, no. They said, let's talk about Quaaludes in the deposition, page 126 of the deposition. They said, did you ever have Quaaludes in your possession? He said, that was the drug that young people partied with in the 70s. Now, in the 70s, Mr. Cosby was in his mid-30s, and that was the party drug of the tour choice. They were called disco biscuits. Those Quaaludes, they didn't make people lethargic. They didn't cause paralysis. Women liked the Quaaludes because it heightened their sexual arousal. To be more graphic, it made the orgasm more intense. So women love those things. They said, well, did you ever give women Quaaludes without their consent? He said, no. Did you ever give women Quaaludes? He said, yes. They said, when they asked for them. Did women ever ask you for Quaaludes? Yes. Did you give them to them? Yes. That was his testimony under oath. Now, that deposition was sealed in federal court by Judge Rubino. Judge Rubino never liked Mr. Cosby. He had a disdain for him. But it was sealed. So now you fast forward. Mr. Cosby settles out of court with the woman for $3.38 million for all things to go away. So he has moved on with his life now. Well, 2014, Mr. and Mrs. Cosby decided to put their art collection on loan to the Smithsonian. Well, they have one of the largest African-American art collections in the world. It's probably valued at maybe a couple of billion dollars. The only way you were able to see their collection, you would have had to be invited to one of their many homes to see their artwork. So many people wanted to see this collection. Mrs. Cosby granted the Smithsonian and said, hey, I will put it on loan for 2 years. Not only did she put it on loan, she made a contribution to the National African American Museum of the Arts of the Smithsonian, a contribution of $100,000. So we're in D.C., and the collection has been put on. You know, it's being shown. We have Samuel Jackson there to host it, him and his wife. Dionne Warwick is there. We have a performance after the event by Sheila E. It was just a star-studded event. Well, earlier that day, the AP, I had interviews set up with Mr. Cosby, with Gwen Ifill, the late Gwen Ifill, and Roland Martin, and David Brokaw, who had been with him for over 40 years, and Norman Brokaw, David's father, represented Mr. Cosby. He was the chairman of WME, but he was bedridden, sick, you know, had taken sick and had been sick for some years. So David had this AP thing set up for Mr. Cosby to do, Associated Press interview. That's when David Sunway, you know, leaves the room. When you're never supposed to leave the room when your client is doing the interview, because you're there to make sure certain questions are asked and certain questions are not asked. By that time, since my interview schedule had ended for him, I went back to my hotel, and next thing I know, I look at the news, and AP catches him off guard with with Mrs. Cosby and says, look, we want to talk about these allegations of women. Mr. Cosby said, look, I will appreciate you if you destroy that tape. Basically, don't disrespect my wife. Mm-hmm. And it was all planned and set up. Next thing you know, Gloria Allred comes out parading women out. Now, which I kept telling Mr. Cosby, I said, look, somebody has gotten a copy of the deposition. Because if you go back and look at the accounts of what the women were saying, these distractors, they all had the same story. They were given a script by Gloria Allred. Media was not allowed to ask them any questions. She made it very clear. If you ask any of these alleged accusers questions, that you're re-traumatizing and re-victimizing a victim. So all they were able to do was stand there, record, and the women read the same script. They said pills. He gave us pills. It made us this way, that way. Because she had a copy of the deposition that was sealed. While that was going on, the Associated Press puts up millions of dollars to fight to get the deposition unsealed. Eventually, the deposition is unsealed. And Bruce Castor, the former district attorney now, he's running again for his seat again against his current district attorney, Kevin Steele. Kevin Steele runs a Willie Horton-style campaign ad stating, if you elect me, I will bring Bill Cosby to justice, if you elect me. He converts from being a Republican, because Castor is a Republican. Now, Bruce Castor is his former district attorney who also headed up Trump's second impeachment. So, Steele runs his ad. He becomes a Democrat. He wins the election. Next thing you know, before the statute of limitations ran, he filed charges against Mr. Cosby. We have emails where his predecessor, who's now a judge, Rita Furman, she tells Steele not to do this. Don't do this. It's not constitutional. He didn't care.
Right.
They all had a scheme. It was already a scheme in place. So the judge, now this is what's interesting, the presiding judge over both trials he ran for district attorney against the former DA and lost, Bruce Castor, Judge O'Neill, Stephen T. O'Neill. And I'm just giving you some color so you can understand how this was all framed. And this was all a conspiracy, and it was a well-planned-out assault to take Mr. Cosby down. So Judge O'Neill, his wife name is Di O'Neill. Di O'Neill is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. She was responsible for working with rape organizations to get Mr. Cosby's honorary degrees rescinded. Judge O'Neill helps her with her dissertation on sexual assault. Also, Judge O'Neill loses in early 2000s, 2006, he loses his race against the former district attorney who gave Mr. Cosby a deal, who said, I will foreclose on any criminal proceedings against you, Bruce Castor. He lost in the race against him. So he had a grudge, and the reason why he lost, Castor revealed that Judge Stephen T. O'Neill was having an affair with his ADA, his associate district attorney. And we filed motions on top of motions asking the judge to recuse himself. He sat over his own recusal motions.
Wow.
He denied us. And
yes, sir.
He sits on the bench and states, I'm the judge. I am the Commonwealth. I make the laws up as I go.
Yes, sir. Yes,
so
sir.
We get into the first trial, of course, and we had a hung jury. It was the longest deliberation in the history of Montgomery County. The jury, we had our voir dire in Allegheny County in Pittsburgh. We had more older jurors. Every black person that we went after, they would strike them down in Pittsburgh. Well, the jury foreperson, we interviewed her, a white female, after that trial in 2017. She tells us, she was like, we all came back with a not guilty verdict. And the judge told us, no, you're going to go back and deliberate. That's
yes,
the first trial. So we get into the second trial. And for the first trial, we didn't even put on a defense. We didn't put on a defense. They had one 404B witness, Kelly Johnson,
okay,
who worked for William Morris. She was a black female. Her father is a former detective for Los Angeles Police Department. Now, Mr. Cosby had been with William Morris Agency for 50 years. He saved them from bankruptcy 7 times, including NBC from bankruptcy 7 times. That's why we say NBC stands for No Bill Cosby. But Kelly Johnson sits up there and states, yes, Mr. Cosby assaulted me and raped me. Now, this is the same woman who was fraternizing with other entertainers in William Morris and has a baby by the singer Maxie Priest. She sits up there, her mother gets up on the witness stand crying. The question our attorney, Brian McMonigal, asked our criminal attorney, he said, your father was a police detective for LAPD. You didn't tell him? She said, no, I was afraid.
Yeah. Wow.
So then the second trial, what they do, the fix was already in. Tom Mesereau, I brought him in for the second trial. Mesereau, who handled Michael Jackson. Mesereau decides to structure his legal strategy around everything he did. And for Michael, I told Tom, I said, look, I don't think you should get the jury from Montgomery County. We should let the state Supreme Court decide like they did in the first trial. Let us pick the jury from a rural area. Because in those rural areas, those people don't buy this stuff. He decides to get the jury from Montgomery County. When Michael was tried in Santa Clara, but Mr. Cosby, he has a home in Montgomery County. Mr. Cosby is a Philadelphian. The jury from Philadelphia is different, but the trial was not in Philadelphia. It was in the county. That's a big difference, the county versus the city. So Tom decides to go through voir dire, and we go through that process. While they're in jury selection, a black woman, she gets striked, but she's in the room with the jurors that got picked. White guy states, look, let's get this trial. Let's get this over with. Let's just vote him guilty and go home. Juror number 11. This black woman calls our investigator's office and reports it. Now, she came in with a white attorney, a white male. She was crying. They had a special hearing with her, the judge. Our attorneys were not allowed in that hearing. All that we know, she walked in there crying. When she walked out smiling. Maybe the judge said, hey, she had some charges against her. Maybe he said, hey, if you go away with this, I will drop the charges against you.
Right.
So when I saw her, she walked out smiling, happy, as if she won the lottery. So the trial goes on. They give the district attorney, Kevin Steele, an a la carte menu. Four B witnesses, prior bad acts. These are people who get to come and testify about a defendant and say, we know something happened, and it's only on a sworn affidavit. We file motions to say, well, we want to be able to question these distractors, these 404B witnesses. The judge said, no, I'm not going to allow you to question them. I'm not going to have that because that's re-traumatizing and re-victimizing a victim.
So these five
women get on the witness stand, cry and talk about Janice Dickinson. Yes, I wrote in my book that Bill Cosby flew me from Bali to Lake Tahoe because she wanted to be a singer. And Mr. Cosby, you know, he helped discover Phyllis Hyman. Phyllis Hyman was there. He brings Janice Dickinson in. After Phyllis heard her, she was like, this girl is garbage. No, she can never make it. So she knocks on Mr. Cosby's door. She wants to have sex with him. He blows her off. She writes in her book, I go back to my room, I pop two Quaaludes and drink a bottle of wine. She called it on the witness stand. She said, yes, I lied to get a paycheck. It's called poetic licensing. We had another woman, Janice Baker Kenny. Janice Baker Kenny states, yes, me and my girlfriend, we sought after, we went looking for the big black man. That's what we like. I've done every drug known to man, LSD, cocaine, you name it. I'm a recovering addict. They said, well, did Bill Cosby drug you and rape you? I can't say he did. But after I saw all the advertisement and Gloria Allred puts up a billboard saying that, hey, if you know something, come forward. And she puts up a ransom of $100 million for Bill Cosby to pay her. And she won't bring another woman out. Well, of course, if you see this, you're going to come forward. This woman cannot remember if anything happened. Another female, Lisa Lott Loveless, out of Vegas, she states, all that I know is he was stroking my hair. He was my mentor. And I drove home, and I slept for 3 days. I lived with my parents. Nobody woke me up. And the judge, I felt these distractors testify on the witness stand crying, Shalene Lasha. Go Google her. Yeah. Google her name. Oh, I'm a crack at it. They pulled off the street, cleaned her up. She stayed on the witness stand. He did this to me while I was 17. You did this to Dr. He called himself Dr. Huxtable. They said, when did this happen? 1981. Well, the Cosby Show didn't come out in 1984.
Mr. Wyatt.
Go ahead.
So I'm listening to you detail a lot of what you say are false allegations and inconsistent statements, and I think it's interesting, there's so much information. And so we got, like, with the opinion, one of the things they talked about with the due process violations, because I guess what I'm hearing you saying is that the targeting by these women, it is, like, symbolic of some of, you say, violations of people who, like, due process violations where people have been murdered because they don't get fair trials. And so I think that's what you're telling us, is that the trial was definitely not fair. And we know from the opinion, you know, it talks about how he got there in the first place, which was that particular agreement.
You know, this was no different than Central Park Five. This was no different than we saw with Carol Dunham, who accused Emmett Till of doing a whistling at her, and he got murdered. And she waits till she's 80 years old and says, I lied because I want to go see God. You know, this is nothing new. This is we've seen this throughout history. And this is a man who was given a, you know, 3 to 10 year sentence. And he served 2 years and 10 months of an unwanted and unjust vacation. You know, right. And for that, what the PA State Supreme Court did, it became one of the greatest wins in the history of jurisprudence, you know, because what they stated was that he should have never been charged and convicted. You guys stripped this man of his constitutional rights and due process.
Right. Yeah, because
this
like
American
you say,
citizen,
all those – yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. This American no, citizen, what they basically said that Bill Cosby was not an American citizen. They took that away
wow.
from him.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, like you, we opened up the show with the 450 years of this type of unjust treatment, the use of the law wickedly. And so, you know, like you said, he did not, he wasn't tried for these other women allegations. You talk about 404B witnesses and prior bad acts. And as we know as lawyers, that's some type of, those aren't the people that he was charged with any kind of criminal act, Ms. Constance, who
correct.
Even in the opinion, the district attorney, the opinion of the Pennsylvania court said that Mr. Castor did not charge. You know, one of the reasons he looked at the evidence and he did not believe the evidence could get a conviction. So himself as the district attorney was allowed to, you know, handle that. And he decided not to charge Mr. Cosby with any crime because the evidence was just not there. And even the fact that then he used his influence to try to get a civil suit or civil
mm-hmm.
settlement for Ms. Constance, and this is what the DA did. And so, like you said, based upon that, you know, Mr. Cosby gave up some of his Fifth Amendment rights and in a deposition, even though he never admitted, you know, he didn't say he did anything criminal. And that's the key with the American justice system. You know, this if it's not a crime, you're innocent. And so the innocence of this brother is what – you know, the court says that the due process constitution, or you know, for due process of law, which is at the heat of any fundamental fairness, the prosecutor must comply with due process, the court said. The universal concept permeating all aspects of the criminal justice system is this fairness. And I've heard you talk about the governmental power and how the little person can, you know, without these constitutional protections, even, you know, Mr. Cosby's a, you know, definitely a icon in our community, but these type of due process violations are done where our people are not getting fair trials. And then the media is used to make it look as if there's something, smoke when there's, you know, fire when there's really smoke. And so can you address some of that as well? I wanted you to finish your conversation, but for our listeners, many of them don't know about law, and so we always want to empower them and remove the distractions by giving them that plain English with some of what's going on. Because, and I also want to say this, you know, we're here because of the outrage that I feel with how the media has not even tried to put the fair light on Mr. Cosby's victory. You know, Mr. Cosby, the court, it vacated it. They, you know, they said his due process rights are violated. Mr. Cosby is now innocent. And so we are celebrating the fact that this man who's done so much good for our community, you know, in the opinion of the court and the facts in this case has been, you know, shown not to be you know, the conviction is vacated. He's not guilty. He's innocent.
Well,
you're
right.
Yes, sir.
You're right, and that's what media does. You know, I said these are the media that's doing this are media insurrectionists, and it's unfortunate that these insurrectionists look like us. You know, the ones who are programmed to say that, you know, this American citizen Bill Cosby that he got out on a technicality, that his constitutional rights was a technicality. Look, the Constitution, just like God, laws, statutes, and commandments, were not given to us as a suggestion. They were given to us as a mandate. And so you have those essential tools of the Constitution, the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment, that protect the powerless, whether rich or poor, from the powerful, which are the gatekeepers in the judicial system. And that's what happened to Mr. Cosby. What Mr. Cosby has always stated, this is bigger than Bill Cosby. And the the part that worked for him, I'll tell you this, Mr. Cosby has something different than you see even a lot of, whether they're white or black celebrities who are now facing charges or doing time, who have been convicted and charged or whatever. He has someone out humanizing him. And as
right.
I tell anybody, the, what has to happen, you have you always have two trials going on. 15 years ago, you could rely on having a jury of your peers. You could rely on having a fair judge for a bench trial 15 years ago. But with the birth of social media, that has gone away now. You know, because the jury pool is already tainted with social media. You know, you don't necessarily need mainstream media anymore. They put out tidbits of information. They don't give you the full scope of the information. They just give you tiny pieces of it. And now, you know, you go on social media, which I always say that social media was created to take away, to take black people away from current events of the day to prevent you from reading. The minds of black people to believe somebody's guilty, you know, before they're even ever charged. You know, they could just run a documentary. They could do whatever. And that's the benefit, what I tell everybody. You got to have somebody trying that case on the outside. Somebody taking what they see in the courtroom and then putting it into layman's terms and sending it on the courthouse steps and, you know, putting it out on various platforms, the truth and the facts, if allowed, because they're never allowed by mainstream media when it comes to us. And that's what happened, and that was Mr. Cosby's saving grace. Not to, you know, pat myself on the back or anyone.
No.
But that has to happen now. You know, even when we're representing somebody who might not have a name, who might just be some local person, and you look at the facts of the case and you say, well, no, this doesn't meet a conviction or charges. Well, that's why I think law firms today and lawyers today, they got to say, no, let me find somebody who's not out trying to make a name for themselves, that they just really want to do the work. And they're going to put the messaging out. Because I tell everybody, attorneys at some time, their hands are really tied because of canon laws. You can't go out there and attack judges and do different things that I can do. You know, I'm not an attorney, so my hands are not tied. When the judge during the trial called me out from the bench in front of the media, I knew then that I was making headway. I knew then that I was putting facts out. Because for a judge to, you know, recognize me and basically try to punish me in some sort, like some verbal lashing from the bench during the trial, I knew then that I was doing what I was supposed to do. And as I always told Mr. Cosby, I said, look, they got what they wanted, but gave us what we needed, because this was so much bigger than him. We were able to pull the sheets off of these people and expose these people, not just from a Pennsylvania area, but from a global standpoint. And that's the beauty of what we were able to do. And I can tell you, this man, I remember when he was sentenced, he called me. We would have breakfast every morning. I'll stay in the guest house, and I'll go work out at 3 in the morning. We always had breakfast at 5 a.m. together. And he was sentenced on that Friday. He called me and he said, come over to the main house and I need to talk to you. And he said, look, whenever my – well, he was found guilty, I'm sorry. And he said, when my sentencing day comes in September 2018, Andrew, I'm going to start preparing myself to do time. He said, I'm going to start giving up a lot of things. I'm going to give up a lot of foods, because they're going to put me in the iron box. He said, I just want you to be aware of that. But now it's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to tell my story, And it's your responsibility to look out for the family, not only yours but mine now. All of this is in your hands. He said, this is about legacy. This is about civil rights. And I always would stop him and say, no, it's not about civil rights, because their civil rights are not our civil rights. I said, this is about equal rights. And he would prepare himself. And when I would come back home to Alabama, he would call me, and he would let me know how things were going. And I remember that day he was sentenced. He said, Andrew, he said, this is the last time you will walk with me. And I'm telling you this, nobody better not be crying. If anybody is crying, you get rid of them. He said, but I'm telling you, when you walk me to this elevator and hand me over to these people, he said, you go out there swinging, and you never stop swinging. And he said, all that I'm asking you to do, don't sensationalize anything. Don't go to their level. Stick with the truth and the facts. That's all I want. And don't ask for special treatment from black media, from mainstream media, from grassroots media. And that's been the play. And Mrs. Cosby kept that play alive. This woman's remarkable of what she was able to do to keep the team together when white folks wanted me gone. White attorneys were trying to sabotage every move I would make for him. And he would call from prison. I was his only visitor. And he told me, he said, look, I don't want my wife visiting me. This is a man who served 4 years in the Navy, didn't go off to war. He said, look, I'm going to war. When you go off to war, they don't send your family members in and visit you because it takes away your mental toughness. And when he got into that prison, inmates told me they put him in a level 5 maximum security prison with guys on death row, murderers. I'm talking about they put him in SCI Phoenix that used to be Greaterford. They closed down Greaterford and built this new prison on the same grounds as Greaterford. This was the most violent prisons in Pennsylvania. When he walked in, he said to me, when I walk in, I won't walk in. I will not be walking in as Bill Cosby. I will be walking in as William H. Cosby Jr. He said, I will be walking in. Stand to these guys, we got dirty laundry together, let's clean it up. And this is a man who told them, I don't want a radio or television in my cell because I'm not here to be comfortable. Wow. I'm here to fight for every black person here. And he asked to be put in general population. Now, mind you, Mr. Cosby went totally blind 8 years ago, 100% blind due to glaucoma, can't see you or me. But he went in there tall, upright, and it's all about having this faith in God and whatever your faith is, Allah, having the faith and knowing that you're innocent and standing on principle. That's how you get through it, and that's why I want to say to just people out here, you know, as black people, you know, to our people, because this is what it's about, saving our people. Like I said, they will always sacrifice a few of their own just to get us, to get the multitude of us. We have to start. In order to go deep, you have to be different. And we did it differently. You know, corruption needs cooperation and collaboration. We refused to collaborate and cooperate with corruption. And we kept swinging. And I remember sitting in his cell, sitting in the visiting room with him. You know, the officers will always treat us great. He will always tell me, and when you come to visit, bring them desserts, hoagies, and cheesesteaks. Treat them like human beings. And I would do that. And that's how we got through it. It was just a lot of work, but we made it.
Yes, sir.
And I really wanted to commend you because you did do it different. And your loyalty and honorable treatment of Mr. Cosby is just exemplary to me as the founder and president and CEO of the public relations firm, you know, because I can remember seeing you on TV and actually being on the courthouse steps and actually holding up your head. So those were things that really made a difference to me, because I want to talk a little bit about you. Give the listeners a bit of a background about you, because I heard on an interview you described your grandmother. You described how you remember watching Electric Company as a child, because we have to really look at the greatness of Mr. Cosby and all the positive media, the Cosby Show, I Love Fat Albert, you know, I Love the Bill Cosby Show, I Love a Different World, and how the values and the education of, that he imparted, you know, with his resources. I've heard you talk about that. So can you tell us a little bit about how you met Mr. Cosby, and also more in your strategy of how your job is to remind and inspire and introduce people to the greatness of that man? But I want you to tell us a little about yourself, if you don't mind, and how you met Mr. Cosby.
Look, I don't have a problem.
Yes, there is.
Wonderful,
yes, thank you.
Wonderful parents and grandparents. My mother and father, Gloria Beverly, Ethel Beverly, they divorced years later, but her parents came to both of them and said, my mom's the only child, and we're from Bessemer, and they said, look, we want to adopt these boys to carry on the family last name, the Wyatt last name. And my mom and dad didn't oppose. And my grandmother, Willie Dale Wyatt, we called her Bay, and I'm named after her husband, Andrew Wyatt. They cleaned up Midfield Movie Theater, and they would take me. They had me when I was maybe 6 months old, arm baby. I had my brother, Terrence, and we were 11 months and 24 days apart. So when my birthday turned, well, I turned 48 on August 3rd. We're the same age until his birthday, August 27th. But they had us, and this is a woman who had a seventh grade education with 14 of them. But she taught us arithmetic because she went to a school like Little House on the Prairie. She taught me how to, she used to always say, cook, clean, and come safe. But I remember sitting on the floor of the projects, 2613 Clarendon Avenue in Bessemer, and watching Bill Cosby and Electric Company, learning my ABCs. And I would point to the TV and say, Bay, I'm going to do that one day. I watch the news. We would read the newspaper together, drink coffee. She just gave us a foundation. My mom and dad came around every day. We never lived with them. But this woman gave me something that to just stand on. And we didn't realize we didn't have nothing. We didn't realize we were poor, because no matter what, we had a garden. Everybody had a garden in the projects.
Right.
And we didn't know we were in the projects. You know, we just knew everything looked the same. But she was just wonderful. I slept with her till I was 15 years old. And I remember when she took her last breath in my arms. And I was a discipline in high school. And I used to come home. We would all take turns. She ended up with cancer. But this lady was such a sweetheart. And she just, I remember watching, you know, we used to watch, like, movies of old black shows, and To Kill a Mockingbird became my favorite because my third-grade teacher, Miss Richardson, and my fourth-grade teacher, Miss Barnes, showed it to me. And I remember coming home angry about it, but then they would sit us down and talk to us. And my grandfather passed in the 70s. But, look, it was just – it was people who understood who we were and showed us how to be citizens. That's all you need. It wasn't trying to show us how to be a great athlete or this and that or be famous, just citizens. So my mom, my dad passed away 18 years ago in Detroit. But my mom's still alive, and she's a former educator. So I look at these people. And whenever I make a move or whatever I do, I think about Bay. Everything I do, I think about her. And I always talk about, I said, well, Mr. Cosby, he grew up in Richard Allen Project. He's 44 years older than me. But our backgrounds are so similar, okay? Very similar. And so I worked in, you know, I went on and graduated from just Lanier High School, Miles College, and I became the first black intern from HBCU at ABC 3340 Television. And a wonderful lady, Angela Scott Moore, she used to be married to Pastor Waskey Moore, she gave me the internship, and I credit a lot to Angela. And then after I got the internship, they hired me after 3 days. And I worked my way up to every department of the news business. But when I got in news, I watched, and I always told Mr. and Mrs. Cosby, I told everybody, I watched them create scandals on people, especially people like us, politicians. They would say, we hear that this mayor, this person is having an affair. They would have camera crews follow these people, and I would be a part of that. And I just saw how they used it to hurt us. I saw how you go in the control room with the director, and when a shooting happened in a black neighborhood, they would say, go get the worst-looking person and put them on camera. This is what the director is saying and the producer. They never said get somebody intelligent. And I'm sitting there in my 20s saying, wow. And, you know, your hands are tied. And I always would speak out. I was always outspoken in the business, and I just refused to conform to that environment. But they respected me when I didn't conform. And that's why I tell everybody, I said, look, when you conform to do your own end, they never respect you. But when you don't, they fear you, because they said, what does this person have that they don't need us to survive?
Yes,
sir. So it's just breaking that chain of what they do. So when I saw them doing that, and even in Fox, and I moved over to Fox, and the same thing happened, and I worked my way up to selling the TV shows like Idol and that kind of stuff. So I worked in every department. I wanted to learn every department from the bottom to the top of the news organization, because I knew I one day wanted to start my own public relations firm. And I knew that majority of people in America who own a PR firm, they've never worked in the business. They don't understand the business. They don't understand how a press release should look. They understand deadlines and just getting statements out. They don't know anything about that. They either, especially white people, they mainly inherited something from their family members. So I knew I had to be different. And so when I went out on my own and Fox let me out of my contract, I started my firm in 07, and I started picking up people like Robin Givens and you name it. And then I went grad chapter Omega Psi Phi, players twice from Yard and Miles, and they, Brother Muhammad will understand that. those things were, you know, Ada Epsilon, you know, was always an issue. So I went grad chapter through attorney Tom Larkin, who's a dear friend of mine, and he kept telling me, you should do it. And that happened. And that, I will always say, Omega Psi Phi really changed my life and opened up a world of possibilities for me. Because in 2008, the 75th Grand Conclave was coming to Birmingham, and Brother Muhammad knows his brother, Robert Holmes Jr.
Yes.
He responsible one of the chair people. And Tom Larkin went to him and said, hey, get Andrew. He can help you raise some of the money. He said, I don't know who this guy is. But he took a chance on me. And I raised $200,000 for the 75th Grand Conclave to Birmingham. And I brought in Sprint and State Farm. At the time, my friend was the head of State Farm Marketing. So Pam L., a black female, and she's now one of the first women in the front office of the NBA. But you saw all those State Farm commercials with Chris Paul, LeBron James. She did it. So she sponsored the 75th Grand Conclave for me. And then I was working with Dominique Wilkins, Robin Givens, Thelma from Good Times. I had Robin Givens and Thelma as an artist in residence at Miles College. And then I got a call. I was representing the National SCLC. And I got a call from the news director of ABC 3340 He had a news anchor who they were trying to make her the new franchise. Your new Wadagio, and your new is now an attorney. But she said Bill Cosby's coming to Birmingham. He said the only person that I know, this is a white guy, Gary Kelly at the time, who can get in touch with the president or any world leader is Andrew Wyatt. Call him. Then Miles College said, hey, can you get him? SCLC. And at the time, Mayor Bell wanted to get him the key to the city. But a lot of entities had paid me to get to him, and I didn't know how to get to him. But I told him I could. So I went through 30 people through William Morris. And all of a sudden, he called me from his home. And he was like, hey, you're looking for me. Who are you? And this is in 2010. And I told him who I was, and I told him what I wanted him to do. And he said, okay, deal the card. And he said, hey, by the way, where did you go to college at? I said, Miles College. He said, yeah, I did a benefit for them in 1992. I said, yeah, I was just graduating from high school. And my mother was the director of admissions at Miles, and that's how I ended up there, also with my high school 12th grade teacher. He told me he wasn't going to graduate me unless I signed the paper, Melvin Nevitt, that I was going to go to Miles College because I would be good for Miles. So that's how those are the route how I got to Miles. Because I was supposed to go to some school out of state, Hampton. But anyway, he said, also, did you pledge something? I said, yes, sir. I said, we're fraternity brothers. He said, oh, boy, you a Q? And he said, well, deal the cards.
Yes.
And he facilitated everything that I asked him to facilitate. And I never forget I had somebody working with me. And after he did the benefit for Miles College, they paid him $10,000. He didn't want any money, but President French said, I don't want you to come here doing nothing for free, who was a former president of Miles. So he said, okay, just give me 10 grand. And he made them give him cash. And we sat backstage. He said, look, you're tied to Bill Cosby. It's in 2010 forever. He said, so you got to be careful of white women. I never forget that. He said, you got to be very careful of white women. And I said, okay. And next thing I know, we walked into his plane after he did the commencement speech. He hands me the $10,000. I said, here you go. You have it.
Wow.
And
yes, sir. That's
how we started. So the joke is Dick Gregory had the best joke. He said, what age? I was working with Mr. Gregory.
Okay.
He said, what age were you when you started with Cosby? I said, 37. He said, how old is Cosby? I said, 73. He said, what year you was born? I said, 73. He said, look, N-word, the numbers don't lie. It was meant to be. So
wow.
It was meant to be.
Wow, that's wonderful. You know what? We also have a comment from Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad. She'd like to get into this conversation as well.
Please,
Ava.
please.
Oh, you're
I'm sorry,
listening.
Dr. Ava. I'm sorry.
No, oh, don't apologize. Don't call me Dr. Ava. It's okay. Because I'm actually an attorney myself as a juris doctor, but that sort of picked up popularity at some point. I don't even remember when. But I just wanted to go back to the discussion. Really, I found myself so irritated and frustrated in the wake of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court overturning the conviction, that phrase, as you all spoke of, getting off, him getting off on a technicality. And I detest both of those phrases, you know, getting off. Well, first of all, he received a sentence of 3 to 10 years, and he served 3 years. And none of the conversations in the major media outlets, I didn't hear any acknowledgement of the fact that after this extreme violation of his constitutional rights, he served time that he never should have done. He never should have spent a day incarcerated. And
yes,
I wanted to remind us that for the audience that it was the O.J. Simpson trial where a change took place in the meaning of presumption of innocence. Because if you remember, when the jury acquitted O.J., the very next day, the media was saying he never proved his innocence. He never proved it, which is a complete reversal of what evidentiary law in this country has always been, and that is the presumption of innocence, that when you are charged with a crime, you come into that courtroom wrapped in a cloak of innocence. And it is the burden of the prosecution to remove that cloak of innocence, as was done in the Derek Chauvin case, where the other extreme, where the prosecution had to produce mountains of evidence to secure a conviction. But I wanted to just share that I, too, was very disturbed, especially when I heard black people making those ignorant, ridiculous comments. One woman, I don't know if she's in the DA's office in Pennsylvania. I don't know. I can't recall her name, but she was
Kristen,
one of the lead voices.
Kristen Fedden.
Okay. I was disgusted by her. I found her whole posture and line of thinking absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, you can tell, Brother Andrew, when they're just parrots. They're just saying what they need to say for their job and their position. And I just wanted to say that for the audience, that no one is obligated to prove their innocence. If you are charging me with doing something, then prove what you're advancing against me. But I just wanted to add that. Mm-hmm.
No, I think and well said and eloquently said, and it's important for people to know, and that's a great term you use, you walk into court with a cloak of innocence, and it's up to them to remove that. But they have to remove it based on the Constitution and not stripping you of your due process. And we see them, not just with Mr. Cosby, but with so many blacks, similar due process, and they say that you're not a citizen of these United States of America. And that's how they view all of us. They can put whatever charges on you that they want. And they have a boys and girls club now, you know, of judges and DAs, but that's why we need people in the system and in the media that has a conscience and is not being swayed by old Q scores, social media, or money to, you know, say, help me get this conviction. And that's what we saw with Mr. Cosby. You know, we saw judges who were afraid of how it was going to affect their political future. We saw media entities, the Joanne Reed of the world, Craig Melvin, Lester Holt, Gail King. You know, these are supposed to be shown up black media personalities. But because of them wanting to be accepted by their white counterparts, they too said it was a technicality. So what I said to someone when I did some of those mainstream shows, I said, so all of the sympathy and empathy that you show for George Floyd, Sandra Bland, Breonna Taylor, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, and the list goes on and on and on, you're basically saying that their constitutional rights were dead on arrival. But you're saying that they didn't really have it because it was a technicality. If you truly believe that Mr. Cosby was a technicality now, you're saying that what happened to them was just a, they've been murdered was a technicality.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Right.
Yeah. You have to really put it in that context to understand it.
That's right.
Yes. And for anyone who wants to make a comment or a question, please press number one so you can get into the host queue. And, you know, people are asking, I'm getting some texts about what really does due process mean and why it's so important. And we have to look at the fact that the Fifth Amendment gives you the right against self-incrimination, and so no statements ever have to be made by anybody who is accused of anything because you have that right to remain silent. And so then when you look at due process, that's talking about fairness. That's talking about is the process being followed. And so when you have cheating done from the very onslaught, when you have this stripping of due process, as you keep, you know, calling it, Brother Wyatt, you know, then there's a slippery slope. So from the time that due process begins to get violated, the person is not going to get their fairness, their constitutional rights. And with our people in these extrajudicial killings that are going on, I think what I'm hearing you say is that you're stopping me saying maybe I've got some marijuana, but rather than give me a ticket so I can go to court, you just kill me. And so that's a, you know, total violation of the process, which, again, this is what happened in this case because Mr. Cosby had no – he would not have, you know, he detrimentally relied on the DA, and the court held that to be a definite violation of due process. But we got some callers, and I'm going to go ahead and go down the line. Yes, caller, last digits 3708. 3708, your line is open. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead. Yes, sir. Thank you for calling.
Okay, great. Sure. Good evening. And so I want to say good evening to Mr. Wyatt. Mr. Wyatt, I remember some time ago, I think maybe the beginning of 2020 or 2019, well, several years ago. So this may have been 2018. I think they were saying that there was a question of whether or not Dr. Cosby's homeowner's insurance would cover his legal fees. And then I remembered sometime later, like maybe weeks later, I saw on Bloomberg where Mrs. Cosby had sold a couple of pieces from the collection. So I really, but I never could find any follow-up information on did the homeowner's insurance actually cover the legal fees, and how does that work? Because that was the first time I ever heard of something like that.
Well, good evening to you, sir. Yes, good evening to you, sir. AIG was his insurance carrier. And you have limited liability, you know, insurance and personal, all types of different policies you have that you could buy. But you also have policies to protect you against defamation suits, all kinds of things. So we were able to use some funds through the policy that done uniquely. Since we had civil matters pending, we were able to get AIG to help supplement some of the research and some of the investigative work for the criminal case because it was a benefit for them, for him to win the criminal case because then they didn't have to pay out all those monies for the civil litigation. So, but not all, not a lot. So a lot of those funds, you know, AIG would cover certain things from like I said, well, we need researchers. We needed investigative work done. But they didn't cover the attorney fees. So what we were ended up having to do, every lawyer you saw defending him in the criminal proceeding, those were paid out of pocket. What wealthy people do that's a little different, you know, they're extremely asset wealthy, okay? And some of the artwork that you saw Mrs. Cosby, you know, sell, she was already giving things to museums and everything. So she will accumulate certain paintings, and then when she accumulate one painting that she really wanted, she will work out a deal with some museum to say, I want this painting housed in this museum, and they will pay her X amount of dollars. But, you know, look, Cosby spent over, I saw a sign up somewhere at a place where do luxury cars and expensive cars, and it says speed costs, how fast do you want to go? You know, our philosophy, freedom costs, and, you know, you just have to spend for your freedom. And so some of it was supplemented by the insurance company, AIG. Now, what AIG turned around and did, once Mr. Cosby was sentenced and taken into custody, they, without our approval and knowledge, and they can do that, there's no law that says it's written in fine print on the policy, they started settling with the women who had civil actions against him while he was locked up. And unknown to us, we will find out in the media. And he had that policy for 50 years. But, you know, it's different ways you can use the policy to help you. And I'll just tell anybody, just, you know, go through your homeowner's insurance. Regular people should do it and say, hey, I want a policy, and I want to, you know, buy a policy to protect me against defamation. And you never know. Somebody can sue you for anything these days. I hope I answered your question. Hello?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I hope I answered your question.
Yes, we hear you, Mr. White. We opened it up for another caller. Yes, sir.
Okay,
my name is James Douglas from Houston, Texas. I guess I'm old school. I'm probably like Mr. Cosby. I think we have to realize that in America there are two constitutions, one for white people and one for everybody else. And so I agree with everyone, and that is that white people have to be proven guilty, but African Americans and people of color have to prove that they're innocent, because it shouldn't have taken the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania to come to a conclusion that Mr. Cosby's constitutional rights have been violated. That should have been something that a first-year law student would have understood, allowing all those women who could just come in and say whatever they wanted to say when
right.
There was actually no charges, no investigation, no anything. So, you know, I agree. This was that Me Too movement, and I think one of the things that happened to Mr. Cosby is that he became very wealthy and very powerful. And white people don't like to see wealthy, powerful, independent-thinking African-American males especially. And that's what he was.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're right, Mr.
Yes,
Douglas. Look,
thank you,
look, I tell everybody, this is a man who, you know, they say he was going around in the 60s and 70s drugging and raping white women. Now, this is a man who was on Nixon's enemies list and labeled as a communist. His shows were canceled. His phones were tapped by the FBI. He was watched, him and his family, by the FBI. Mr. Cosby, you had number 123 on the list was Carol Channing. 124 on the list was Bill Cosby. 125 was Jane Fonda. 126 was Steve McQueen. 127 was Joe Namath. 128 was Paul Newman. 129 was Gregory Peck. 130 was Tony Randall. 131 was Barbara Streisand. And 132 was Dick Gregory. Now, you tell me how is a black man who's on this infamous list is going around raping and drugging white women, and they didn't just go pick him up on their white horses?
Yes.
There's no way.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm going to take this next caller, if it's okay. Yes. Caller, I believe the Sister Starla.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Tamala.
Waalaikum salam,
ma'am. And Sister Ava and Mr. Wyatt.
Waalaikum
salam. Mr. Wyatt, I myself am a member of the press, and it was astonishing to me, but not surprising, that you had members of the press, whether it's mainstream media or even the black press, that misrepresented what Dr. Cosby actually said in the deposition once it was unsealed. You went into that a little earlier in the show, saying verbatim exactly his answers to these questions. So I wanted to ask you, you know, where did this stem from, where you heard so many people parroting incorrectly, I may add, that in the deposition, oh, he admitted to, you know, giving women, you know, quaaludes or drugs and sexually assaulting them. And he said no such thing. So I wanted to find out from you, where did this come from, and how did it just start getting legs where you actually had members of the press, you know, parroting this untruth?
Well, what happened, first off, black media, well, I mean, black media didn't show up. The only black media that showed up at the trials, both trials, was Stacey Brown, Black Press USA. The CEO and president is Dr. Ben Chavis, who was part of the Women's in 10. But we were sitting in the courtroom. What they did, they took excerpts from the deposition and just took excerpts of where he said, yes, I gave women quaaludes who asked. But they didn't say who asked. They reconstructed his words. And this was amazing. You could hear, I'm telling you, I worked in the business, and the media entities, they're mainstream media, New York Times, New York Post, CNN, they will all talk with each other and say, okay, you do this. You say this. All right, we got to find him guilty. So let's put out this fact. And they will run out when they got a lunch break or a break, or the judge would give a break, and they would report what they wanted to report. You know, look, I remember calling Tom Joyner and having a conversation with Tom Joyner. I said, Tom, just read the deposition. And he refused. He refused. Shows like Ricky Smiley, all these people refuse because they didn't want to go up against the system, and it affect their sponsors. Look, Tom Joyner came out on his radio show, I want to be show and said, I want to be the first black man to join Me Too.
Wow.
You know, that's what we were up against. I'm talking about, these are renowned media giants that we went to. I'm talking about also fraternity brothers of mine that I went to. And this is what they told me. They would have me, like some of them, I've never been on Steve Harvey show. I've never been on Ricky Smiley show. They're not going to have me on because they don't want that information out there. And it's unfortunate. Roland Martin would have me on. Joanne Reed would never have me on. Don Lemon told me I would never bring you on my show because you're not a celebrity. You know, they're not going to have anybody on that's going to strike that nail against that chain and spark
yes,
a fire.
Sir.
They're
yes,
not
going
to do that. So that's what happened.
Yes, sir. Perfect ending. We are actually down to our last minute. And so, Mr. Wyatt, I would like to thank you so much for coming on our show. Again, Mr. Wyatt is the public relations and crisis manager for actor and comedian Bill Cosby. I thank you, Sister Ava Muhammad, the national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I thank you, Brother Maurice Muhammad, for coming on. And for all of the callers who did not get a chance to ask their questions, I thank you for calling in and listening. And please join us on Thursday for the Elevated Places Ask Dr. Ava show. It comes on at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time. I would like to thank the Elevated Places team, Sister Samaya, Sister Nyla, Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, and thank you once again for listening, also Sister Rona Muhammad. And tune in next week for more informative discussions. And once again, I would like to thank Mr. Andrew Wyatt, our brother, with the Public Relations and Crisis Manager firm. And please, Mr. Wyatt, if you have any way you want us to contact you, I also want to say go to Mr. Cosby's Instagram page. It's a beautiful page, and it is just filled with information.
And we did promote your show on his Instagram, all his social media pages. But thank you so much for having me on. And the next guest that I want to have on your show is Mr. Cosby himself. So thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. All praises up to Allah.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's awesome. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.